you pay any attention to prostate news, it's been non-stop for the last several months. And then if you just look at what happened today, something exciting happened early in the morning, and every prostate stock that's listed on the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ started moving. A company had a trial. It's a med invasion company. They had a drug called D3-3100. It's a hormone therapy pill, and we know that it's something that they've been testing in a randomized trial. And today they announced that they had to stop this trial. You have a phase 3 randomized trial, meaning half the patients get the real thing and half the patient gets sugar pills. So this study, which was not supposed to mature, FDA asked them to stop the trial because this stuff works so good in improving survival that it was not ethical for the group by chance getting the sugar pill to continue on the sugar pill. So if you have stocks in med invasion, it went up 140% today. Which means that FDA is going to look at this for a fast track FDA approval, and this drug is probably, it is a hormone, going to be in the market sometime in 2012.
Could that still be resistant after a while, like Lupron or those hormones?
Ultimately, the answer is yes. But you now have another weapon after you fail first-line hormone and after you fail chemotherapy, where the end game of cancer care is not what your PSA is doing. Okay, your PSA may or may not be even relevant in deciding what is effective or what is not effective. But survival is definitely an endpoint in cancer. So when you have the drug, it's by mouth. It's like a medication you take as a pill, and it shows that it is so successful after failing plan A, plan B, plan C, and plan D. It's pretty amazing. If you look back in the last 12 months, this is probably the fourth or fifth drug or trial that has really like showed a lot of excitement. Okay, for those of you following some of this stuff, Johnson & Johnson in March of 2011 has the FDA approved an abiraterone, which is a hormone pill, because it has established efficacy in improving survival. Last year, Sanofi Aventis has a new chemo drug, cabazitaxel, which has also shown improvement in survival. And before that, Dendrien, the company that does the T-cell, has Provenge, which actually showed survival benefit. And then if you look at what else is on the horizon, a month ago in Europe, there's a new drug that's being tested that also has shown improvement in survival. And this is not the usual way of putting poison into the body or stopping cancer. If when prostate cancer goes somewhere else, illegal immigration, and after it leaves the prostate, it goes to bone. Breast cancer, colon cancer, and lung cancer, and none of the other solid cancer have this special, distribution. So the end game is not, how do we worry about what happens to the cancer in the lung or what happens to the prostate cancer in the brain? Because it rarely, if ever, shows up in the brain or in the lung. We worry about the cancer showing up in the bone. Now, in Europe, there was a study putting radiation with radium-223 injection into the blood. This actually gets circulated and attaches to the cancer in the bone and kills the cancer in the bone anywhere that the cancer is. So it's a liquid radiation that can go throughout the body because it just has an affinity to the prostate cancer. It just goes to where the cancer is active and kills the cancer. And that has shown an FDA reason to put it on the fast track. And it's probably going to be here sometime in 2012. And that's really pretty exciting because you don't worry about the cancer staying in the prostate. So what? It may or may not cause you a little bit of difficulty voiding, but you worry about the cancer showing up in another part of the body. So you have now have another method of attacking the cancer in the bone when FDA approves this probably in a year. This is Dr. Williamson, my partner. She's in my group, and she's my counterpart. Okay, I take care of men waist down, and she takes care of women waist up. So she specializes in women's breast cancer.
Nice to meet you.
They're all true. And this is all within the last 12 months. Okay, and Amgen now has this drug called Xgeva. Xgeva is a drug that Amgen has FDA approved a couple of years ago to treat osteoporosis. And treating osteoporosis meaning, okay, women after menopause, bone density goes down, you need something to strengthen the bone, so Amgen has this drug, which used to be called Prolia. And when you use a slightly high concentration of this drug is now, first FDA approved this drug in stopping the bone being more receptive to cancer cells and having the cancer being more active. So if you have prostate cancer going to the bone, most medical oncologists will now give you this drug, Xgeva, which can quiet down the cancer in the bone. It doesn't directly kill it, but it actually just quiets down the cancer. 2 months ago, FDA approved this drug for men on Lupron, because men on Lupron has an acceleration of bone density loss. So they actually go through much more fast, like women after menopause, of losing bone density. Now FDA can use this drug now for men with androgen deprivation therapy, whether it's Zoladex or Lupron, and strengthen the bone. And studies have now shown, that this is another recent randomized trial in the last 3 months, showing patients who have this drug, which is not an anti-cancer drug per se, has lower chance of the cancer showing up in the bone. So it's like all this is happening in the last 2 to 3 years. Okay, prior to that, the guy that won the Nobel Prize in medicine, okay, 35 years ago, was awarded the Nobel Prize because he connected prostate cancer with testosterone, and the treatment at that time was orchidectomy, which is removing the testicle that produced the testosterone. So things are changing fast and furious, and now there are so many things that we can do to stop the cancer showing up in the bone, treat the cancer that has shown up in the bone. We can directly either kill the cancer with chemotherapy, or we can stop the cancer from being stimulated to divide. It's basically depends on what oncologists deciding on, do they use plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, and there's like next year will be plan E and plan F. So it's really, really exciting in treatment for prostate cancer, because we've never had so many things all happening at the same time. And then the Provenge, which is the immunotherapy, it's very expensive. It's $94,000 that Medicare decides that they are willing to pay. This is to take someone's blood, expose it to prostate acid phosphatase antigen, take it out 3 times, put the blood back into your body. It stimulates your body's T cells, recognize prostate cancer cells as not good guys, attack it, and there's improvement in survival. So things are really very happening very, very fast. Most of your oncologists who don't specialize in prostate cancer, they have no, really, a lot of them don't know what's going on. They know less than your stock guy who is following the biotech on the stock market. So there are some specialized oncologists in Southern California, and so if you really want to get a second opinion and things get a little bit out of hand, there are a couple of them. And I hate to say this, there's a really good guy at USC. Anyway, so that's the other end of the excitement for prostate cancer, the treatment side. Now, what I asked Mace to do was put together a few articles I thought was at least what the paper is printed on. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in every news outlet in the newspaper about why are we trying to screen for prostate cancer. So all this happened about 2 months ago when the U.S. Cancer Prevention Task Force in Washington, D.C. decided to make a statement saying that routine screening for patients to try to find prostate cancer, even if they're younger than 75 years old, basically it's a waste of time, it's a bad idea, and it's totally a waste of money. That's kind of paraphrasing their recommendation. They put it as a class D recommendation, which means that there isn't a lot of data supporting that this is a good idea. Obviously, this was picked up by ABC, NBC, every news outlet, and everybody had an opinion, and then everybody had two opinions, so the debate continues. They started this in the days where there was questioning, is routine screening mammogram was a good idea and does it save life? Again, you probably have two camps that argue, and obviously the camp that benefits financially says, yes, it's a good idea. The camp that's independent says the literature doesn't support it. Now, for cancer screening, I think if you look at the four top cancer, the most common ones, breast, prostate, lung, and colon cancer, I think most people only agree that there's only one screening that saves lives and reduces cancer mortality. That's colonoscopy. All the other screening, okay, you can argue whether mammogram saves lives, and you have the radiology group saying yes, and you have the general practitioner group saying the literature, the support, the data is very, very iffy and not really very concrete. You have the lung screening, people who have smoked 20, 30, 40 pack year, gets an X-ray or a CAT scan to try to screen for lung cancer. That has never, ever been proven to save life. But a lot of people still get it done. And then you have, okay, the one that used to be important, which is cancer of the cervix with the pap smear. Now that has become a non-issue or non-event because all the young women get immunized to the virus that causes cervical cancer. So that's what got Governor Perry hot water. So the incidence of cervical cancer is going way down in this country. It's not really a big major health issue because we know cervical cancer in women is a sexually transmitted disease because of the virus, immunize the virus, and you basically take care of that. So for anyone in the room that's 50 years old, if you haven't had a colonoscopy, maybe a good idea for you to suffer through the 2 days of starvation and go get one done, because that's the only test that really, it's a win-win. If you find a stage one colon cancer, you celebrate because you have done something to save your life and your butt. If you find something that's precancerous, you dealt with it by taking out that polyp, and you are now like, okay, you're fine until the next time you have it done, which if you have a family history, maybe 5 years, if you don't, maybe 10 years. And if you don't find anything, then you have the peace of mind. I mean, colon cancer is a real health problem, and colon cancer can kill. And colon cancer, if you find it at stage one, it's a lot easier to just get rid of than if you find it at stage four. Even though someone with stage four colon cancer, his name is Herman Cain, is 5 years old and running for a president. So, the one article I came across in the New York Times, this is the one on the right side, that's March 2010, it's called The Great Prostate Mistake. This is worth reading because, okay, at first I did look through this and I have no idea who this chap, Richard Aveling, is. This name doesn't ring a bell. I've never recognized his name. After I read the second paragraph, it says, I discovered PSA in 1970. So this is written by the guy that discovered PSA. This is his own opinion of how much good or how much damage he has done by discovering PSA. So it's really insightful from the guy who discovered PSA and how he feels about what he has done 1970, so this is 40 years later. And then the next one is just the LA Times editorial on this controversy about do you screen for prostate cancer even in men that's under age 75. And then the last one is why PSA tests will be so hard to give up. I mean, you can pick up any newspaper and someone will have an opinion on this. And a lot of this is party line. The American Urological Association definitely think that this is all mistake because they want control of when do they do a biopsy. So if no one gets screening PSA, their office is going to be empty. And on the left side, there's a lot of talk in the last couple of years about if we find prostate cancer, should we do, what should we do, can we leave it alone, and should we treat it, and it's a never-ending debate. What if active surveillance is chosen over some initial treatment for low-risk prostate cancer, how does that affect someone's quality of life? The LA Times one says, for some men with prostate cancer, the best treatment is no treatment. Chicago Tribune, major cancer group endorses active surveillance for prostate cancer. Nothing is black and white. I'll give two extreme examples, and it's very, very obvious. If you have someone that's 50, 60 years old, and his father died from prostate cancer when his father was 60 years old, he has an uncle with prostate cancer, and the cancer is spread to other parts of the body. Okay, it is kind of stupid not to screen that guy. And you don't screen that guy when his PSA is 4.0. You don't screen this guy when his age turns 50. And you don't screen this guy when someone feels something abnormal on the digital rectal exam. You follow this guy 20 years before his father was diagnosed with prostate cancer. You get a baseline PSA, which is one of the most misinterpreted number on earth, and make sure that the doctor that's doing the screening doesn't think that 4.0 is something magical. You follow someone's PSA by what his PSA is with his PSA percentage that tells you how much of the PSA may be from normal or abnormal sources. You follow this guy's PSA over time. And the change of PSA over time is the PSA velocity. So for someone who's 45 years old, if his PSA went from 1 to 2 in a year, and you're sure that the 2 is an accurate number, he hasn't had sex in the last 48 hours, he hasn't had the direct exam in the last while, he doesn't have a urinary tract infection, then his PSA doubled from 1 to 2 in a year. I mean, this is nowhere close to the 4.0 cutoff point, but that is a red flag. And also remember, the very, very, very aggressive cancer, the Gleason 5+5, they are so aggressive, they're dividing nonstop. They may already have lost the identity that they have come from a prostate source, and they're just too busy dividing, and you can have very aggressive cancer that doesn't produce PSA. And then you also follow someone's PSA density, which means that for someone who's 50 years old, his prostate should be about 25 cc. And there's no way that his normal PSA should be 4. It should be much lower than that. And then you have someone who's 80 years old, whose prostate is 100 gram. You probably don't even care his PSA is 10 because he has a big gland that produces a lot of background PSA. And it's irrelevant. So you interpret PSA by the PSA velocity, percent PSA that might be from free or non-free PSA, and the size of the prostate. You divide the PSA by the volume of the prostate, that gives you the PSA density. someone's finger probably is the least reliable thing to detect prostate cancer. I mean, I've seen pathology report where the urologist found something abnormal on the right side and the positive biopsy was obtained from the left side. someone's finger really is not a good sense of if the prostate gland is normal or abnormal. But the good news is we now have stuff that's better than my finger and someone else's finger. It's an MRI or a color Doppler right now. So use imaging, new technology. I have stopped using CAT scan for the last year or more to try to look at something going on in the pelvis, especially to look at the prostate, because it is really not that good a test. So if I want to image the prostate, and there are 5 questions. Okay, if you want to know what your prostate, if you have cancer inside the prostate, there are 5 obvious questions. First question is, has the cancer gone to the margin or gone beyond the margin? Has the capsule been involved? MRI is much superior than the CAT scan. Has the cancer changed the seminal vesicles, the 2 glands behind it? MRI is much better than a CAT scan. Has the cancer gone to the lymph glands? MRI is much better than a CAT scan. What area inside the prostate is abnormal as far as blood flow, diffusion? Which area may have more problem with cancer disturbing the blood flow for the normal washout? MRI gives you that information, not the CAT scan. So when I do a staging for MRI and I really want useful information, I get an MRI. I do not get a CAT scan because CAT scan is like, do it for the sake of doing it, and it's like the information is not sensitive or specific enough to tell the whole story. So, unfortunately, in 2011, this MRI technology is not available at every hospital. We are fortunate enough here to have the 3T MRI and a radiologist that specializes in MRI reading. So we're very, very fortunate. Anyway,
Doctor, one question. When do you recommend a bone scan? At what point?
After diagnosing of prostate cancer. Okay, this is totally not according to the NCCN guidelines, because the National Comprehensive Cancer Network guidelines says you do not order a bone scan when you have low-risk cancer. You order a bone scan when you have high-risk cancer defined as lesions 8 or above, PSA 20 or above, or you have a stage that you think is a T2, T3 or higher. Okay. If it's me, I'll get a bone scan just for the sake of getting a baseline. The insurance will say it's a waste of money, but it will save you a lot of grief 5 and 10 and 15 years later. If you start having low back pain, joint pain, shoulder pain, you know where your baseline is. The bone scan will show us you now have degenerative changes in your lumbar spine. You now have arthritis going on somewhere. You have previous trauma to somewhere in the body. So it's not useful necessarily now, but I think it would be much more helpful 10 years from now if you start having some pain somewhere and you have a reference bone scan previous to that.
On the PSA screening, I think it saved my life because initially I had a 3.2 and it jumped to a 4.7. My regular doctor told me to go to a urologist. Now, he gave me a biopsy. And that biopsy, in that room, the monitor showed no tumors. Okay, so he was pretty, it's Dr. Bashai, been relative to 30 years. He was very positive that there was no problem. But in the biopsy in the lab, on the other side of the lobe, he showed prostate cancer. Not only prostate cancer, but a grade 8. Now I want to ask you, if it didn't have the PSA, this thing is aggressive, it would have metastasized. Yeah, luckily, by the way, I had the bone scan, well, this, it didn't metastasize. If I didn't have the PSA, wouldn't it have went and metastasized? Not that, you know, because on a rectal exam or, I don't know, MRI, I didn't have MRI, it didn't really show that I had cancer.
I think your question is on an individual case.
For me,
absolutely.
For an 8.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I think on a mathematical side is national guidelines saying, can you prove on a population basis that PSA screening reduces prostate cancer mortality? So I think it's hard to generalize statement. I mean, obviously the young guy with a family history, you want to pick something up at a young age because that cancer is likely to be more aggressive, especially if his father died from that cancer. But on the other hand, if you have someone that's 75 years old, okay, he had diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol, and he had a stent put in, he had a mild heart attack before, and his father died at age 57 from a heart attack, and his grandfather died from a stroke at an age of, okay, 50 or 60, he's now 75 years old, are you going to screen that guy? And the answer is, okay, we probably don't want to screen someone like a Dick Cheney, okay, because his main health issue is his heart. It doesn't matter what his PSA is, he's going to have, okay, major health issues and probably die sometime in the next decade because of complications of cardiovascular and heart. Then you have all the intermediate where someone's common sense and good judgment needs to come into play. The American Cancer Society made a statement last year or 18 months ago saying you should do routine, everybody in Pasadena come for a blood test to check your PSA. Everybody has to be consulted about why you gain your PSA. The problem is not finding the cancer, it's the problem is the medical, economic, and medical forces in this country, which is medical, financial, medical malpractice. Once you start finding something, it takes a lot of common sense, intelligence, and good judgment to not treat it. I mean, this is America. We think we have unlimited resources. We do have the best cancer care anywhere in the world that everybody is envious of. The problem is the urologist, he finds someone with a very low risk early stage prostate cancer. This is a PSA of 4 point something. One sample has a Gleason 3+3. And his PSA density, okay, the volume over the PSA is less than what is the cutoff point, which is 15%. And you know that this PSA velocity is going up very, very slowly. The urologist is going to give you three choices. Do you want your radical next week, next month, or do you want the Da Vinci versus the open? Key thing is a serious illness. I mean, a lot of urologists, okay, the last five patients that they have seen, three patients came in because of they have enlarged prostate and can't pee. One patient came in because he has erectile dysfunction, and one patient came in because he has kidney stones. So cancer, in relative to what he sees, is a big deal. So he looks at cancer, prostate cancer, as a serious illness compared to someone's kidney stones or someone's BPH and enlarged prostate. So they are much more, I mean, just as generalized, you have different urologists that may not have different philosophies, but urologists tend to do more aggressive curative treatment. And then you have oncologists, okay, that doesn't specialize in prostate cancer. You have the radiation oncologist, the last five patients he saw. Someone with brain tumor, that person is not going to be alive in 15 months because there's no cure for a brain tumor, okay, like Senator Kennedy. Has a very high-grade brain tumor, had the best care, lived 15, 16 months. Someone with liver cancer, okay, there's no cure. Survival is expected to be 9 months to a year. You have someone that comes in with a pancreatic cancer, not the type that Steve Jobs has. He has a less aggressive type of pancreatic cancer, which is an islet cell. But if you're Steve Jobs, you have a liver and you live a little bit longer. But most pancreatic cancer is diagnosed when it's not able to be operated and they live 6 to 9 months. And then you see someone with prostate cancer where the survival with or without treatment at 10 years is 99.9%. So it's totally different perspective of this pathology report that says there is a prostate cancer Gleason 3+3. I mean, as a broad general statement, I don't think anyone with a Gleason 3+3, low risk prostate cancer, low volume disease, should undergo any immediate curative treatment. He should get second, third, and fourth opinion. But when you look at your health, give yourself another 3 to 6 months, you may look at this very differently and not have a reactive. I have a prostate cancer. I want it out tomorrow. Because it doesn't warrant that much anxiety, and it definitely should not be a knee-jerk reaction. The question is this cancer one day going to show up somewhere else outside the body? Maybe. Okay, it depends on how long you'll be around. If you're going to be around for another 10 years, it probably is going to take longer for the cancer to show up somewhere else in the body with the distance 3 plus 3. If you're going to be around for another 20 years, question is, do I want to deal with something that's kind of not really important now and take, I'm willing to accept all the side effects of the treatment, whether it's impotency or incontinence? Or should I just enjoy my life and keep an eye on this for the next 5 to 10 years and only deal with it if and when the cancer starts to express that it's behaving a little bit more aggressively? And that doesn't mean your PSA is rising. It means that if you re-biopsy it, the cancer has become a more aggressive type of cancer, then you probably want to deal with it, but I don't think you have necessarily missed the opportunity to cure it.
Doctor, I was told too, a friend of mine has grade 8, and he went ahead and had surgery. And I was told the effective thing to do when you have an 8, because you take out the prostate gland, but it's surrounding the area, it's still going to be cancer. Then you got to give, because his PSA came up to 0.04, didn't go to 0.01. And they're going to give him some Lupron and some radiation of some kind. And the man had a stroke a few years ago. He's now about 66. So I just wondered, I heard this from the American Cancer Society. I talked to a research oncologist who said people who have an 8 should not really have surgery. They should go the radiation route.
From a non-surgeon, I think that you can't generalize a patient's 12 plus 4. Okay, you need to, before you consider the treatment, most urologists do not order an MRI. Most urologists look at you and says, you're 65 years old and you're pretty darn healthy. I can get you out of the hospital in 2 days. The anesthesiologist doesn't have to worry about long anesthetic risk. You should have surgery. You're 75 years old, you're on a blood thinner, you had a previous cardiac arrest or stent or something bad. The anesthesiologist is not going to be very, very happy with you under general anesthesia for 3 or 4 or more hours. Maybe you shouldn't have surgery. And then the fact that you have a T2 versus T3, the lesions are 6 or 7 or 8, is not the determining choice for the urologist. It should be the determining choice for you. It may not be the determining choice for the urologist. I think urologist looks at your anesthetic risk. You're young, you should have surgery. You're not that young, maybe you shouldn't have surgery. If it's a Gleason 4 plus 4, if you have the studies that pretty much confirm you don't have cancer outside the prostate gland, I personally have no problem of the patient getting surgery. And you look at the lymph gland at the time of surgery, and you look at the margin, and you look at the capsule, and there's a lot of information, and that would tell you, do you need something further after surgery? But I would not knee-jerk and say some of the decent 4 plus 4 or 4 plus 5.
Does it mean anything because his PSA can go to 0.01? Because after surgery?
No one agrees what the PSA should and shouldn't be after surgery. Once upon a time, this really smart man called Patrick Walsh from Johns Hopkins, who's the father of nerve-sparing radical prostatectomy, decided 0.2 was a number that he's comfortable with. Anything less than that, it's a cure. And everybody else has a different threshold. Some, I think UCLA once upon a time had a 0.3. I think what we know is sometimes after a radical prostatectomy, you have normal prostate tissue left behind. That may or may not be surprising. Your prostate is not an orange. It is not a golf ball. It is like an inverted pear from top to bottom. Your urethra goes through the middle of that. And this is the base, midline, and the apex. We have no idea how far down that apex really extends down to. We can't see it. So when you remove the prostate, okay, you're not trying to get beyond all prostate tissue because you have to hook up the bladder and the urethra. And for prostate cancer surgery, you can get a little bit more margin around everything because your bladder, your rectum prevents you from doing that. So if you're treating a melanoma on the skin, you don't just remove the spot that looks abnormal. You take a nice centimeter, 2 centimeters or more around it because of microscopic cells. Cancer, by definition, is crab in Greek, which means they have legs and tentacles that goes out. So if you see something, it doesn't mean that's where the cancer ends. You may have the tentacles. So you take wide margin just to be sure microscopic cells around the tumor that you're seeing, you don't leave something behind. With prostatectomy, whether it is the Vichy or not the Vichy, you're trying to remove the prostate only with the seminal vesicles because you have to connect the tube that goes through the middle of the prostate and hook it back up to the base of the bladder and not try to have too much tension. So you can't have prostate tissue left behind at the bottom and you're hoping that tissue doesn't have cancer. So what happens if someone had a radical prostatectomy, the PSA is 0.1? There's a good chance there's some normal prostate tissue left behind either at the apex or somewhere, and that produces the detectable 0.1 PSA. So what happens 15 years later when this PSA starts to go up? The tissue that was left behind, which is normal prostate tissue 15 years ago, now has a new cancer that has developed in the remaining prostate tissue. So was he cured of the cancer? Probably yes at the time, but if you leave normal prostate tissue behind, what prevents it from having another cancer develop? Because prostate cancer is never, rarely if it's ever single focus. That's why when you do cancer surgery, you don't remove the right side, even if you have a biopsy of the cancer on the right side, major radiation, you do not treat one side only. That's the criticism for cryotherapy. Cryotherapy does not choose to treat the whole gland, and you think that the biopsy tells you where the cancer is, but sometimes it's just random, it just hit the area that has cancer cells. So partial prostate treatment for cancer is not at this point an established curative treatment.
Going back to the book I read was Patrick Welsh. It was published in 2007. It's the second edition. I just finished it last night. The book pushes towards, you know, a 60. If you're in decent health and you're 60 and you have it, the book pushes you towards having a radical prostatectomy. It basically is recommending it, saying that's the way you should treat it. And it's a very well-written book, but it's 4 years old. And now you've mentioned some wonderful breakthroughs in the past 4 years. But what you say is addressed in the book, too, that even after you have it taken out, 10 years later, you could have a higher score, or the micro
metastases,
the flakes go through the blood and just hangs around and could attach to any other part of your body or something like that. It's kind of frightening to read the book and not go for the radical, because it depends
on the grade.
Yeah,
totally. I mean, the only thing that really determines outcome is the biology of the cancer, which is the Gleason's number. And I mean, the PSA is kind of silly. I mean, PSA, okay, it's really not a good indicator of if the cancer is aggressive or not aggressive. The stage of the cancer or the percent of biopsy positive for the cancer cell may or may not be a real indication of what's going on in the gland. But what you want to know is, what is the likelihood that this cancer is going to show up somewhere else in the body? Is it going to be short, intermediate, or long term? if it's going to be long-term, meaning more than 10 or 15 years, is there a big hurry to get rid of every last prostate cancer cell in your prostate now? Nothing is free. You have to give up something. And whether it's give up some quality of life, as far as erectile function, dysfunction, incontinence, there is a price tag. And this is balanced with emotional sense of well-being. If you are someone that is so worried about your prostate cancer that every 3 months when you go and have a PSA, you stress for 3 days before that, and you stress for 2 days until the results comes back, if you lose sleep, then watchful waiting really is not the right thing for you, because the prostate cancer is not going to kill you, but you're going to die from a heart attack worrying about it. So that's not good either. Okay, so it's quality of life. Segue. I think a lot of you in this room know Don Runyon. Don and Regina. Don wanted to share a few things with this group because he's been here since 2005.
Yes.
And there's something that's going on that it doesn't necessarily shed light into this, but it's really a story I think it's he wants to share. And please.
Dr. Lim, thank you. I want to thank Maze also. 5 years ago, I ended up having a PSA that was in the 4 range, and needle biopsy, a 3/3, small percentage. And thankfully, my brother's daughter, was seen on Channel 7, Dr. Lamb, and a wonderful minister here in town on television, and referred me over, and I had a chance to come meet these guys. And I've got to really say that knowing Dr. Lamb, after having some opinions and then getting even more opinions, probably 6, 7, or 8 opinions, that what I hear in this group for the last 5, 6 years gives you a lot of hope and everything. In fact, even though with the situation that has arisen with me, if it wasn't for Dr. Lamb and his insight and thoroughness, I could be in worse shape than I am today. And so to make a long story real short, over the summer, I had a needle biopsy because it had been 5 years. The Gleason score went from a 3/3 to a 3/4. And so I was in the process of debating what I'm going to do after school lets out in January. And that was probably to have the prostate removed. Prior to doing that, making that decision, it was decided let's make sure that everything is intact in the prostate. And so an MRI was ordered. It showed everything was still intact and the glands around the prostate were clear and all. But there was a small indication on the pelvis area, the hip area, that was slightly worrisome. So Dr. Lamb and Mays had suggested that I take it over to my orthopedic surgeon, and we did a CT and an MRI and bone density. I've got osteoporosis, which showed up. But what also showed up, a big surprise to everybody, was about 6 or 8 hot spots in the bone throughout the body, spine, hip, rib, so on. And from that point, my urologist in Thousand Oaks, Dr. Hemsel, was greatly surprised. He thought it would be very rare that a prostate intact would lead to spreading in the bone that quick. So a few more tests were done, and back here to Huntington, and a few more MRIs and CTs, and it showed an area on the lung. Had a needle biopsy on the lung about a week and a half ago. It turns out it is lung cancer that has spread to the bone. If it wasn't for Dr. Lamb ordering that MRI, I would have blindly gone into having the prostate removed. They might not have caught this at all. And then way down the road, it would have been just way, way too bad, way, way too late. We never know when it's too late or what is ahead of us. We got to hit everything when we can in a
and I followed. Okay, this is 2005. Okay, it was not fashionable to do nothing in 2005 for prostate cancer. It was like choose your poison and do something. Right. I think with probably 5 or 6 opinions, it was like 3 would say radiation and 2 or 3 would say surgery, and no one would say he's young, leave it alone. And what I wanted to do was, okay, have him decide with facts. This is low-grade cancer. Do we want to deal with it now, or do we have to deal with it now? And he's been very reliable. I checked his PSA and a second marker, prostate acid phosphatase, every, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 6 months. And that has done absolutely nothing over the same period of time. But we decided that it was good to make double sure that the cancer biology hasn't changed. That's why, even though the PSA hasn't really done much, suggested for him to go back to his original urologist and have a second biopsy. And when the cancer biology now has changed to a little bit of, okay, mostly it's still 3, that's a small component of 4, I suggested for him, okay, go revisit, or what are your choices of treatment? And he was scheduled for radical at Cedar Pulp in 2005 or 2006.
Yes.
So I said, go back and talk to Tim Wilson, who's the head of urology at Cedar Pulp, and he's a wonderful guy, and he's probably the best surgeon in the West Coast doing the Da Vinci robot. So Don went back and talked to Tim Wilson, and he's going to have surgery. And it was just a matter of taking care of the semester, and when's a good time, and the upcoming trip somewhere. But then when this MRI came back showing something abnormal, okay, I decided to check, because it doesn't fit with prostate cancer, I decided to run another cancer marker, colon cancer marker, called CEA. This colon cancer marker should be 3, okay, for someone who never smoked, and Don never smoked. It came back 88. So I was under the impression that